From State College to Scottsdale, Williamsport to Hermitage, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, we begin a two-week special focus on economic freedom with a Capital Watch roundtable discussion featuring David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation, and Melissa Morgan from the National Federation of Independent Business. And parents are demanding a bigger say in what is being taught to their children. I'll have a town hall commentary on why the push for parental rights has ignited a brush fire of freedom. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We are set to begin a special two-week focus on education freedom, including a look at school choice options, parental rights, and the progress being made across the nation in empowering parents and students. Our Capital Watch crew will kick off the discussion. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation and Melissa Morgan from the National Federation of Independent Business. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Wonderful to be here. Great to see you, David.
Also here in the studio, our good friend Melissa Morgan, Assistant State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Melissa, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, David.
Well, today, you know, we want to continue the conversation that we've had about a focus on education freedom, and that, you know, certainly I think most people would agree that a good education, a rigorous, meaningful education is foundational for all of our young people for success in life. And so when we have a system that is oftentimes and in many ways dysfunctional and it fails to give our young people that meaningful experience, that, you know, our whole society is poorer, that, you know, that these young people don't get to reach the fullness of the potential that God gave them, and that, you know, and as a result, all of society suffers, that we don't get the contributions that these folks could have made if they had been properly prepared in life. And again, you know, Steve, your organization has been in the vanguard of education freedom through things like scholarships, school choice, charter schools, virtual schools, all those avenues of opportunity to help kids get the kind of educational experience that they need.
Yes. And David, if I can just start out a little bit with some of the basic premises, the statistics around students in school choice in Pennsylvania.
Please.
We have about 1.9 million school-aged children in Pennsylvania right now, mm-hmm. as we sit here. And of those, 72% attend their local zip code assigned district public school.
Yeah.
So a large chunk, a large share,
sure.
Almost three quarters. And that's fine. And for many of them, it's a great experience. We have a lot of really excellent school districts and schools here in Pennsylvania. And no one is disputing that. Excellent schools that are really preparing the kids that they're teaching well for their futures. But at the same time, there's many of those schools that aren't doing so well, many of the public schools in particular, not always, but typically in urban areas in the state and sometimes in the very rural areas. We have schools that are simply not performing up to standards, and many of these schools are chronically underperforming. It's year after year. It's decade after decade. It's generation after generation of kids attending these schools but not getting the education that they deserve, coming out of school not proficient with English, not proficient with math, not proficient with history or science, the things that they need to know to function well in the world and to do more if they're going to go to college or any other sort of higher education. So we're seeing a dichotomy. And you mentioned, I think, that the courts have taken a look at this. And most recently, the Pennsylvania's Commonwealth Court said that our school system in Pennsylvania right now, the funding system, the mechanism is unconstitutional because in particular, there's so much inequity between children in different areas of the state and the types of education they can get simply based on where they live.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned 72% of students in Pennsylvania attend the public schools. That leaves 28% that don't.
Right.
And they're availing themselves of options that are out there, ways that they can obtain an education for their child that better fits, better suits, better allows that child to thrive. And so that could represent a student signing up and going to a charter school or participating with a cyber charter school or attending a private school of some sort or homeschooling or attending a micro school. There's all sorts of alternatives that are popping up.
Right.
And we've seen over the years that rather than this monolithic system that is designed for 100% of Pennsylvania kids, that Pennsylvania families are availing themselves of other options. But often for them, it's an uphill battle. They've got to come up with a lot of money out of their own pockets. They've got to go through a lot of inconveniences and barriers and challenges because the laws and the structure of education system is structured almost to assume that all children will just go to the regular district public school and not avail themselves of other options that may be out there. That's kind of what we are at the nub of. That's what we've got to change. We've got to make it possible, as many other states are doing, for every kid to have the opportunity to go to the school that's best for that child and have some of the state funding or all of the state funding in the case of some states follow that child to that school so they can use the resources that the taxpayers of Pennsylvania are providing for education to be educated in the best way that suits them and their family.
I would view, Steve, what you describe as being real progress. And progress in the sense of like making things better.
Yes.
That you know, it makes no sense for us to be locked into the 19th century factory model of education when, you know, today, especially with the information revolution and all of the different things that we've learned through, you know, social science and the study of behavior, every kid is different. You know, and so it makes no sense that every kid should be expected to thrive in the cookie cutter environment of, you know, whatever it is that's on offer in the local zip code based public school.
And if you think about how the government, even the government, typically funds activities that it's trying to support.
Right.
Let's say it's providing help for folks who can't afford groceries or tuition assistance for college.
Mm-hmm.
Those systems are geared on releasing a certain amount of funds to the person and allowing them to choose where it gets spent.
Right.
The government doesn't say, yes, we'll help you with a scholarship, but you can only attend Shippensburg University.
Right.
That's it. The government says, here, we'll give you some help with tuition. You pick a university that suits you or a trade school or a technical school, whatever it is, allowing the family to make the choice. And if you receive assistance to buy your foods for your family because you're suffering from some sort of economic situation that's a challenge for you, they don't say, here, we're going to send, you know, 10 boxes of Cheerios to your house. You eat this or you eat nothing.
Right.
We actually provide you with a card to be able to go to the grocery store and pick things you like. That's how we do it with virtually everything except school
education.
It's
the same thing with healthcare, of course, that, you know, that we have all the different state assistance programs. And what he says that you can only go to a government-run hospital that, you know, there are all kinds of choices of private religious hospitals that where you can receive your care. So, it is a strange
exception. It's completely
out
of phase with the way we've understood in 21st century America how benefits can be distributed, how public assistance can be distributed, how educational assistance can be distributed, giving the person the choice.
Well, and you know, moving to a different dimension of this, what I think is the same issue. You know, the workforce challenge has emerged as one of the top the top concerns for employers, that we, you know, that the workforce participation rate is low, that that employers, they just can't find enough qualified new hires. And, you know, and as Steve said, finding, you know, encountering people who are innumerate and in some cases illiterate, like our economy cannot function if we don't have a workforce that is well-educated. And I was just going to just ask you, Melissa, to reflect on, you know, what you're hearing from your members on that count.
And that is, I mean, lack of skilled labor is something that we are hearing from small businesses. It is one of their top concerns, especially coming out of the pandemic. You know, they're looking for workers and they're looking for quality workers. And when we talk about, you know, schools, we also think about career and technology centers.
Of course.
You know, not not every student learns the same way. Not every student goes in the same direction. And those just aren't available in every single zip code. So one of the things is, you know, how do we make sure, how do we connect those students to those trainings? And, you know, it is important because we have to have a skilled workforce to have a robust economy here in Pennsylvania. So, you know, education is a very big priority.
Yeah. And those career technical centers and the other sort of larger institutions like, the Penn College of Technology, Thaddeus Stevens, Williamson, they have a really important role to play. And that kind of points to the larger cultural problem that we have with education, whereby for several generations that young people have been told, if you don't matriculate at a four-year institution, that you're a loser and you're going to waste your life. And of course, that's completely untrue, that there are really great careers that are waiting in the skilled trades, in manufacturing, and in fact also that it's been a traditional path to, again, use that word, progress, whereby, you know, a tradesman will work for an employer, often a small business, and then over time that worker will earn enough for his own, you know, set of tools, his own, you know, down payment to start his own small business and go out on his own and be successful and in the fullness of time hire on a younger person who then learns from him and on. Like this has been the path to, you know, to well-being and prosperity for years and years.
In Pennsylvania, it's not as if we're cheapskates about funding education. Pennsylvania is eighth in the nation in terms of the amount of government funding that goes to the school. So we're amply supplying the public school systems with the resources to thrive. But there are dysfunctions within that monopolistic system that just can't be fixed. And the answer is to give families and students the ability to escape from a trap that they can't get out of otherwise. So we are trying to make sure that those opportunities are put in place. In Pennsylvania, again, we are a generous state when it comes to the money we put into the way our schools operate, but we are not getting the kind of performance we deserve for those dollars.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Melissa Morgan from the National Federation of Independent Business. And yes, so it really is – it's about – how can I say it the right way? It's about value, you know, that we need to get the full value out of the tax dollars that are already being allocated for this very important public purpose. We also need the value of the potential of our citizenry, you know, to help our students to learn, to succeed so that they can thrive in life, including like being successful as professional people, regardless of what line of work they choose.
And there are a number of state programs, as I mentioned, that Pennsylvania does have some opportunities for school choice and educational freedom. There's been some programs that have done very well in Pennsylvania. We were on the vanguard back in the early 2000s, right around 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm. Governor Ridge
setting up tax credit scholarships to allow students to take a share of funding toward a school of their choice, mm-hmm. often a private school in their community that is doing better than the local zip code assigned school. And we've just completed a round of statewide polling at the Commonwealth Foundation, and we found that 77% of Pennsylvanians support expanding the tax credit scholarships.
Wow.
So that's you don't find those kind of numbers very often, 77%. Republicans, Democrats, Independents.
Seriously.
Everyone recognizes tax credit scholarship programs. It's the Educational Improvement Tax Credit Program primarily is what it's called. And it has been thriving over the years, getting bigger, allowing more students to avail themselves of better options. However, it's capped by government regulation. Mm. And so every year there are kids left on a waiting list because even though there are companies and entities ready to fund with their donations these tax credit scholarships, they're blocked because there's these artificial caps and limits. Mm. And some in this last cycle, some 70,000 students were left out in the cold, couldn't get the EITC tax credits that they wanted because of the caps.
That's horrifying.
And so one of the steps we've got to take is increase quite drastically the caps on the tax credit scholarship program. So more kids who are desperately needing these tax credits can utilize them and go to school that serves them better. We have other options that we don't have in Pennsylvania yet, but other states have adopted, and we're seeing legislation being introduced this session, both in the Senate and the House, to create Lifeline Scholarships, which is another mechanism to take some of the share of funding that normally would go to fund a student at their district school,
right,
and allow the student to take it with them to whatever type of educational environment will suit them best.
And this would be for the lowest performing schools.
Lowest performing 15% of Pennsylvania schools.
Right.
So the most vulnerable students in the most vulnerable schools would have this lifeline, this option to get out of a school where, again, the proficiency is simply not happening. Some of these schools have a zero proficiency rate in some of the key subjects.
That's an abomination. How is that even possible?
It would be a joke if it weren't so tragic and sad. And so Lifeline Scholarships is one of the things that will be moving in the legislature this year, along with increasing the tax credit scholarship programs. And at Commonwealth Foundation, we're fighting hard to make sure our lawmakers understand what these proposals are and how important they are to their students, whether they're rural, urban, or otherwise.
And it's another dimension of this, again, about – you know, at the same time that there's a very urgent humanitarian impulse here, that like these kids need better schools right now.
Yes, today.
Like each
it can't
kid,
be next year.
Correct.
First grader who doesn't get a good first grade year, they're doomed for the rest of their educational lifetime.
Yes, absolutely. And so even, you know, even as we weigh that, as we should, with you know, great urgency and intensity, there's also, you know, putting on the green eye shade, there's also a government accountability question, whereby, you know, that education is one of the most important things, probably the most important thing that the Commonwealth does in partnership with the local school districts. And so to that end, we dedicate enormous amounts of money. What was the total spend last year?
Oh, it was close to $30 billion.
Yeah, like $30 billion, which to me is a noticeable amount of money.
And that's state, federal, and local.
And again, like, but it's important to get results, and that the argument has been messed up in that we keep pointing to the spend and like more is better, when in fact it's not true. In fact, a lot of our worst schools are not just disasters, they're expensive disasters. And until and unless we get the full value out of those dollars being spent, we're never going to be able to right-size state government. You know, that to limit government spending so that the politicians aren't, you know, spending money faster than people can earn it, like we need to get more value out of the dollars that are being spent, and that school choice and competition, education freedom, is a way to help, you know, sort of change the behavior of those zip code based schools so that they themselves improve, get better, like the same way that, you know, that UPS and FedEx and DHL have made the U.S. Postal Service less bad.
Under the current system, there's virtually no downside risk to a school that's doing poorly, that they're not going to be closed. They don't receive any consequences for their failure.
Yeah.
They just get more funding to go ahead and do the same thing again next year.
Yeah.
That's an abomination to have a system that works that way.
It makes no sense. So this is so education freedom not only helps individual kids by getting them out of bad schools, by getting them into education environments that are more appropriate for them, suit their needs, that it's also in the big picture, it's going to help with that overall process of forcing improvement, of forcing accountability on the schools where, as you said, most Pennsylvania kids go.
Creating a pluralistic and competitive school system, which is the ideal. That's what good looks like, where students can pick from among many good options the one that suits them best to prepare themselves for the life that they're seeking, that will help them and their family feel like they're thriving.
But certainly for our small businesses and the bills that they have to pay, that the overall cost of government just keeps growing and growing, that managing to control that growth, to get more value out of the dollars that are being spent, like that would make a better world for them too, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, an educated workforce is the best way to have a robust economy. So, you know, looking at all the money that we're spending on education, you know, every child should be coming out of school with a proper education, ready to jump into the workforce, ready to go on to the next level of their life and to stay in Pennsylvania.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And so and again, having the qualified workforce, that's part of like the gravitational pull of getting private investment. Because if the investor, you know, looks at an area and says, oh, hey, in this metropolitan area, there's a preponderance of people with the skills that I need, that's a reason to go to that place. And so that also becomes part of competitiveness.
That's often the deciding factor for a business that's looking to potentially locate in several different states. They'll evaluate the labor force. I've seen it I live in the Carlisle area in Pennsylvania, and we've had over the years a really robust economy with a lot of investment in logistics and distribution. And I know for a fact that many companies have considered coming to Carlisle, but they look and they see all the other companies that are already there employing the workforce, and that there may or may not be enough workers to take on the jobs at a new plant. It's been a real issue for them. Now, fortunately, we've had some innovative solutions and been able to answer the call for that labor force, but it's absolutely a real thing that businesses will consider when they're making their siting decisions.
Which is one more reason to get this critical issue right. And again, I'm hopeful that you know, with Governor Shapiro having endorsed Lifeline scholarships during the course of the gubernatorial campaign, that it gives us some hope that there may be a way forward on this. Well, this has been outstanding. We're down to the end of our time. So, Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and Commonwealth Foundation and this important issue of education freedom?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org, and we have a lot of information and resources available for them to dig in a little bit deeper.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Melissa, where can people go to learn more about NFIB Pennsylvania?
That would be nfib.com/Pennsylvania.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Melissa and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The candidates for governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia took to the stage in what proved to be the pivotal moment of a hotly contested race in a closely divided state. Republican Glenn Youngkin raised the issue of parental involvement in public schools, and Democrat Terry McAuliffe took the bait. Quote, "I'm not going to let parents come into the schools and actually take books out and make their own decisions," he proclaimed, adding, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what to teach." McAuliffe's comments, remarkably out of sync with growing parental anger over what public schools were teaching their children, sparked a backlash that cost the former governor another term in the seat once occupied by Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson. It is, in many ways, a byproduct of the COVID-19 pandemic. Public schools, pushed by teacher unions to remain closed for far too long, isolated students at home with their parents who, for the first time, caught a glimpse of what was being taught to their children. They did not like what they saw. Parents in Virginia and nationwide were awakened, and in all too many instances, when they voiced their concerns, were shut down by members of the public education cabal who shared Terry McAuliffe's belief that parents had no role to play in deciding what would be taught to their own children. That spark has ignited a brushfire of freedom that now rages across America as parents fight back against unresponsive and hostile school boards, turning once sleepy local elections into the front lines of the fight against woke indoctrination. The battle is also being fought at the state legislative level. Here in Penns Woods, State Senator Doug Mastriano has introduced legislation that would, quote, empower more parents to have an active role in oversight of what their children are taught. According to a state Senate news release, quote, his bill would require schools to post on a publicly accessible website an internet link or title from every textbook used, a course syllabus, and the state academic standards for each instructional course offered. To ensure parents are aware of any changes throughout the school year, Schools would be required to update this information no later than 30 days after any revision. Mastriano explained, quote, "Transparency is key to ensuring that all parents have a seat at the table and can make their voice heard on issues that impact their children. Schools should be focused on teaching our children how to think, not what to think," end quote. Transparency has most often been a value associated with the left. But when the left does not wish to have its motives and tactics questioned, transparency suddenly becomes a vice, a means for conservatives to enact a, quote, extreme right-wing agenda. But is having details of school curricula readily available to parents either extreme or even right-wing? Or does the education cabal have something to hide? Reaction from the left to Mastriano's transparency proposal was swift and predictable. State Senator Lindsey Williams claimed it is, quote, "an unfunded mandate that stokes the flames of this larger national debate that is pitting the public against teachers." Williams went on to claim that teacher expertise was not being respected. Teachers don't set the curriculum. It is set by a Rubik's Cube of state-level regulations and policies, coupled with some measure of influence by local school boards. The debate is not about teachers. Implicit in Williams' comment is horror over the very fact that parents should even begin to question what is taught. Like McAuliffe, there is a belief that the education cabal knows better than parents what is best for their children. Concern over an unfunded mandate is laughable. The administrative bureaucracy in our public schools has exploded in size, largely due to the need to comply with unfunded mandates imposed by the state. Simply requiring curriculum transparency is hardly a major administrative burden. The bottom line here is that the Pennsylvania State Education Association and the Pennsylvania School Boards Association are two sides of the same coin, fighting to protect their unquestioned power over a public education monopoly. It is why they fight to trap students in underperforming schools by opposing school choice options, and why they think parents have no right to question what is being taught to their own children. Parents, however, can have the last word through their elected representatives enacting laws to make school curriculum more transparent and funding more school choice options. And most importantly, at the ballot box in school board elections, which will take place this year in districts all across the Commonwealth. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRVI-FM in Ridgeway, WIYQ-AM and FM in Saxonburg, along with WANB-AM in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.